I'm taking a big risk giving a sermon about food choices, especially the Sunday after Thanksgiving. First, a disclaimer. I come from an interfaith food family. My oldest brother, who happens to be a climate scientist, is an omnivore and loves a good steak and cooking live lobster in a pot of boiling water. My other brother, Jerry, has been a vegetarian since he was in college. He's 69 years old now. He was concerned about being drafted and thought he would go to Canada and live on a commune, and he didn't think he could kill animals, so he decided to try living without meat. Although his draft lottery number was high enough that he never got drafted, he never saw any reason to go back, so he's been a vegetarian ever since. Steve and I gave up red meat for health and environmental reasons some time ago, and after Steve's heart attack 8 years ago, we tried going vegan for his health. He's now pesca-vegan-ish, and I eat eggs and occasionally chicken or turkey. Three of our daughters live for bacon, and one is vegan. So what I hope to do this morning is give you some food for thought, yes, pun intended, and help all of us to be more mindful as we make food choices. My goal is not to shame anyone, not to hold up any right path, or pretend to be a food guru. I had hoped that Vicki Newman, who actually is a food guru, would be able to join me in presenting this sermon, but she's out of town this weekend. I did consult with her, though, to make sure that I was within the bounds of scientific accuracy, and I do appreciate her input. The main message is to encourage you to ask questions and get information so you are making informed, thoughtful choices based on your values and your health needs. I'm going to address where we get our food, what we eat, the impact of our food choices, and finally, so what should I eat? There is much I don't know and much I won't have time to cover, but I hope you'll find what is here worth your time to consider. Talking about food choices has many layers, but it's not like peeling an onion where each layer fits neatly inside the other. It's more like John Muir's quote that when you tug on a string anywhere, we find that it's connected to everything else. This is the concept of intersectionality. What that means is that my choice of what to eat has an impact on or is a reflection of many intersecting social challenges. I don't have all the answers. In fact, as one of our hymns says, to question is the answer. We each have to find our own path and our own trade-offs among the many dimensions of food choices and the limits of available information. What's best for our health? What's best for the ecosystem? What's the moral or ethical choice? What can I afford to eat? What's best for farm workers? What tastes best? What's best for my weight? What will my kids or my partner eat? What do I have time to prepare after a busy day? What's available? What might I grow for myself? What about the poor people starving in Africa that our parents worried about? In fact, what about the people here and around the world who suffer from food insecurity? The questions go on and on. But just so we're not too serious, I am going to interrupt my sermon occasionally for a few food jokes. What's black, white, green, and bumpy? A pickle wearing a tuxedo. What do you call cheese that isn't yours? Nacho cheese. And what kind of coffee was served on the Titanic? Sanka. Okay, back to the sermon. The source of food. Do I grow my own, shop at the farmer's market, or buy from the industrial agricultural complex, which itself is an intersection of capitalism, environmental justice, labor, land use, immigration, among other issues? The simple answer is yes, all of the above. Most of us don't have the option of eating exclusively from any one of those sources. So our goal should be shopping locally and seasonally and buying as close to the source of food as possible to have the freshest, healthiest, and least impactful purchases. In order to make good choices, we need good information. We do know that highly processed, chemical-laden products are bad for our health, and locally grown organic products without excessive packaging have a smaller environmental footprint and smaller climate impact. If you can, choose to shop at a farmer's market or a grocery store that provides those good options. And if you didn't know, we have one farm stand at Coastal Roots Farm in Encinitas that offers local organic produce on a pay-what-you-can basis. So if you can afford to pay full price, you're encouraged to do so. But if you can't, everyone is welcome to take the food at whatever they can pay. We speak with our wallets by where we shop and what we buy. And we also speak with our voices. Tell the manager of your local store that you want more organic and local options. Ask about the sources of food and the working conditions. Suggest ways to reduce packaging. In response to customer feedback, Trader Joe's announced a commitment to packaging improvements as part of its corporate sustainability program. And their website says that in 2019, they eliminated more than 1 million pounds of plastic from their stores. And they expect that number to go up as they continue to make changes. Next time you're at Trader Joe's, tell them thank you for what they've done and encourage them to keep going. So where to shop? As close to the source of food as possible, and to patronize merchants who incorporate sustainability practices like reduced packaging and fair labor. Okay, another set of jokes. What's green and sings? Elvis Parsley. Why did the banana go to the doctor? Because it wasn't peeling well. Okay, what to eat? Choosing what to eat depends on our human health and nutrition science. While we strive for objective information to guide our choices, what we often get is a mixture of real science and politically influenced government health and food policy. Who's at the table when the Department of Agriculture develops nutritional guidelines for school lunches and the food pyramid? These days, sadly, more lobbyists than experts. We all want to make healthy choices, but it seems the experts often disagree, and it does take some work to figure out what's real science and what's corporate lobbying. Although organic products typically cost more in the short term, there are health benefits for you and for everyone in the agricultural supply chain from eliminating toxic chemicals and unsustainable agricultural practices. The more consumers demand and purchase healthier options, the more producers will change to offer those choices. For example, the CEO of Heinz Kraft, or Kraft Heinz, sorry, in a 2018 interview said that because Capri Sun, you know, the little drinks, wasn't organic, even consumers who enjoyed it as children would not buy the beverage now for their children. Kraft Heinz introduced an organic, no-sugar-added version of Capri Sun. They've got Oscar Mayer hot dogs without byproducts, and Kraft macaroni and cheese without artificial coloring, among other changes in response to consumer demand. Change happens slowly, and there obviously is still demand for what many of us would consider junk food, so those products are still being offered. But we can choose to speak with our wallets, both by where we shop and what we buy and don't buy. And now here's the big issue. Food choices require us to consider how we treat non-human animals. Is there an ethical way to raise and slaughter animals for our own consumption? Some believe there is no ethical basis for eating animals, or even animal products such as dairy and eggs. Others believe that humans evolved to be omnivores, and it is possible to have sustainable and ethical meat and dairy production. Some advocate a plant-based or fully vegan diet for environmental reasons. And again, information matters. Not all crops are the same. Are we buying vegetables and grains that were highly processed before planting, genetically modified, sprayed with chemicals, and planted on land cleared from the rainforest? It could be vegetarian, but clearly that's not a desirable option. Do our eggs come from hens kept in crowded, unsanitary factories, or from happy cluckers roaming freely on a family-owned farm? Unless we ask and demand verified information, we don't always know. And I don't have time to go into seafood and whether there is such a thing as sustainable farmed fish. I don't think so. We'll see. Factory farms cannot be defended. But from some perspectives, animal production done right and in moderation can have environmental benefits. The Food and Agriculture Organization says livestock production can play an instrumental role, for example, in supporting sustainable rangeland management, preserving wildlife and other forms of biodiversity, enhancing soil fertility and nutrient cycling. On the other hand, animal products take more land, water, and other resources to provide the same amount of nutrition as their plant equivalent. Beef requires about twice as much land per gram of protein as chicken and pork, and 20 times as much land as the equivalent amount of protein from beans. So many suggest that if we do eat meat, it should be considered a side dish or accessory, eaten in small quantities, infrequently, and not the dominant portion of a meal. When we talk about food ethics, it's not usually how to choose between an obvious good and an obvious bad. It's more often choosing one mostly good over another mostly good, or one less bad option over another less bad option. Andrew Chignell is a vegan philosophy professor at Cornell who teaches an ethics in eating course each spring. According to an article in the Huffington Post, quote, he still identifies as more of a flexitarian when he's been invited to someone's home for a meal. He said it just doesn't feel right to turn down his grandmother's meatloaf or his 88-year-old Austrian friend's signature Wiener Schnitzel just to make a point. Well, for some people that would be unacceptable. It's like saying, I'm against murder, but if my grandmother asked me to kill someone, I'd do it because I love her. For me, the key is understanding for yourself the reasons that you make the choices of what you eat and what you don't eat. If you don't eat meat for health reasons, then having a slice of meatloaf now and then is not likely to have a big impact, so the professor's position is fine. If you don't eat meat because you don't believe in killing animals, then you're not just making a point, and you have to tell grandma you don't eat meatloaf. Steve and I had this experience shortly after we became vegan-ish. We were invited to someone's home for dinner and didn't think to mention our food preferences. Our host announced with great pride that she had been saving this piece of beef for a special occasion and was honoring us with beef Wellington. She had worked on it all day. We looked at each other, and then we ate the meal. We felt like it was our responsibility to have let her know, and we gave priority to our relationship with our host over our choice not to eat meat. But that's not everyone's choice. From a newsletter called Veg News, the author wrote, let's not forget that veganism is about intention, not perfection. And our intent is to decrease suffering as effectively as possible. Aspiring to be a perfect vegan will only show others that veganism is both unattainable and impossible. I'm choosing to put my desire for perfection aside and support businesses that are implementing much needed change. And New York Times food critic Mark Bittman defines ethical eating like this. Food should be nutritious, affordable, and green. That is, it should minimize environmental impacts. And the humans and animals involved in its production, sale, and consumption should be treated with respect. Bittman says we do not all have to become vegans. There is plenty of meat that is sustainable and responsible nowadays, but always engage in conversation. And Elizabeth Millard, a farmer, wrote in a blog called Experience Life about her ethical eating journey. Because of her devotion to animal rights, she became a vegan, but she had health problems. She said, despite every attempt to combine foods properly, I ended up anemic, constantly sick, and plagued by fatigue. So she tried a hamburger, and she immediately felt better. She said she was so sad about consuming animals, but she needed to honor her health rather than a rigid set of principles. Eventually, she found a compromise. Eat meat, but fight for humane treatment of animals raised for meat and rally against factory farming practices. She said, my ethics and principles needed to evolve, but they didn't need to be discarded. And Michael Pollan outlined a simple rule a few years ago, eat food, not too much, mostly plants. An important dimension of food choices is how we treat other humans. Those growing and harvesting food, as well as the factory workers, truck drivers, grocery workers, restaurant personnel, and their families, neighbors, and others impacted by what they do. Agricultural production can destroy nature, or it can be a nourishing investment in a healthy ecosystem. Farm workers and others in agriculture can be contributors to a vibrant community if they receive a living wage and have good health care, or they can be victims of an exploitive system that requires supplemental services from taxpayers to make up for inadequate compensation by their employers. And as the readings mentioned, we also need to think of food as a social function. Is it just fuel for our bodies, Or do we recognize the inherent beauty and value in the acts of growing, cooking, and consuming food? Socializing around healthy and delicious food can be a way to strengthen our families and our communities and create links to people we wouldn't otherwise know. We use food to mark significant life passages like birthday cakes, meals to break the fast after Yom Kippur and Ramadan, gatherings at the Thanksgiving table. Here at the Fellowship, we have wonderful Thanksgiving and Christmas communal meals, which are very important in strengthening our community. The social justice team and the Village have been supporting the Filibelli program to feed people experiencing homelessness. The Environmental Justice Task Force offered a program on sustainable eating last year. And Vicki Newman has been giving a series of talks on food and health as part of an auction offering. And every week we have our food donation for the Community Resource Center for those in need. And our Dining for Dollars events and our congregation-wide potlucks and other gatherings give us the opportunity to contribute to social harmony through communal eating. So what should we do? Well, our reading, the first reading was from Dr. Vandana Shiva, who was named in 2003 by Time Magazine as an environmental hero, and in 2010 by Forbes Magazine as one of the 7 most powerful women on the globe. She advocates biodiversity intensive and poison-free agriculture as the solution. She doesn't say we should all be vegans or vegetarians or meat eaters. What she focuses on is how we produce our food. So our challenge is to become knowledgeable enough to know what products come from biodiversity intensive and poison-free agriculture. One more food joke. How do you make a hot dog stand? You take away its chair. We have copies of the 2011 Unitarian Universalist Association Statement of Conscience entitled Ethical Eating, Food and Environmental Justice at the Usher Table, which you can pick up on your way out if you're interested, and it's also online. It reads in part, aware of our interdependence, we acknowledge that eating ethically requires us to be mindful of the miracle of life we share with all beings. With gratitude for the food we have received, we strive to choose foods that minimize harm and are protective of the environment, consumers, farmers, and all those involved in food production and distribution. Minimally processed plant-based diets are healthier diets. We encourage a knowledgeable choice of food, and we commit to applying this knowledge to both personal and public actions. And the UUA also offers a call to action for individuals and congregations. And I encourage you to read the whole statement, but I want to highlight one call to action for congregations, which is to provide and sell more plant-based, organic, locally produced, and fair trade foods at congregational events. So I ask, how many of you have ever put money in the basket on the snack table on Sundays? How many of you have ever brought food to share at that table? What if we made a congregational commitment to provide more plant-based, organic, and locally produced and fair trade food on Sundays? Would you be willing to put in a dollar or two or prepare something healthy from local organic products to share? We have a great kitchen team and they do the absolute best they can with the resources they have, but I believe that together we could do more. I also encourage you to contribute more high-quality food when you donate each week to the CRC so their clients have the opportunity to enjoy the health benefits of quality food. It's up to all of us to bring about change if we think it's important. I am grateful for all the choices each of you and all of us as a congregation are already making to sustain our planet and support ethical food systems. I know many of us do the right things now. We're on a path toward more ethical, sustainable food choices, each of us in our own way and within our own abilities. I encourage you to pause before buying, cooking, and eating food and make choices that reflect your values. Acknowledge and be grateful for all those living beings that were part of creating the food that nourishes us. And I want to close with the closing of the UUA statement. With gratitude and reverence for all life, we savor food, mindful of all that has contributed to it, we commit ourselves to a more equitable sharing of the Earth's bounty. Thank you.